Welcome to IndieWire's Filmmaker Toolkit Podcast. I'm Jim Hempel, craft writer for IndieWire. My guest today is director Michael Keaton, whose new film, Knox Goes Away, is a modern-day film noir that gives the audience the pleasures of many movies in one. It's the story of a hitman, played by Keaton, who is diagnosed with a fast-acting form of dementia and has to race against the clock to put his personal and professional affairs in order, is both contemplative and suspenseful, tragic and wryly funny, and provides the satisfactions of a great thriller without being beholden to convention or cliche. It's a really terrific movie, and I'm excited to welcome Michael Keaton here to talk about it.
Thank you. Good description.
I really enjoyed it. And that whole thing, you know, the complicated tonal balance the movie has is one of the things that really struck me about it. But I was thinking that must be a somewhat daunting, or maybe it's an exciting thing to come in as a director with. I mean, how did you, coming into this, like, what were your concerns about the challenges of kind of walking that line of all the different tones and genres the movie was balancing?
Well, that's a good observation. It is both daunting and, I don't know if exhilarating is, you know, might be a little strong, but intriguing and challenging and kind of exciting and fun to see if you can pull it off. So I've said this before, but it really is the best way to describe it, especially following how you just kind of basically described it. It's really, I read the script, went away, did a movie, came back, went away, did another movie, I think, and then kind of thought I'd pick that up and read it again. And it took a while to get there. But then when I said, okay, I want to make this movie, I really had to go through it at the beginning somewhat meticulously because of all those things you just said. I describe it as a, you know, that game Jenga, because of all those things you said, and also the fact that you don't want to tip what happens down the road, which is a little bit of a twist, I would say. There's no sense in even starting it if one thing is out of place. You know what I mean? Because you've seen it, so you know, I think, what I'm talking about. If one thing doesn't work, the movie's not worth making because it doesn't, there's no logic to it. That it doesn't make sense. It doesn't hold up. It's not like the kind of thing where you say, you know, that whole storyline, that's not so interesting, but we can cut that because this is really better. So when we edit it, what if this way? You didn't have that luxury, you know. Now you had a little bit of the luxury of editing, you know, for performance. And also certain things were, and this is where I give my editor, Jessica, tons of credit. She saved me in a few spots where I thought, yeah, that's, I think I got that. I think that scene's working. I wish it would flow into that a little better, blah, blah, blah. And then should say, text me or call me and say, hey, I tried something. I want you to see it tomorrow. I think, you know, you'll see. Tell me what you think. And sometimes I wouldn't even notice it. I'd go, wow, this scene's flowing better than I thought. She said, yeah, I took that thing and I moved it all the way around here. And then we start here and I went, holy. So she thought of stuff I would not have thought of. So the movie has all those things you mentioned, and then you have to buy in and then follow it and stick with it. As the audience seeing what the son is seeing, played brilliantly by James Marsden, are they in his shoes? Because they need to be in his shoes, but at the same time, they're thinking, wait, I don't think his son, James Marsden, it's understanding what's going on right now. So you really had to like keep the audience off balance and kind of driven by the fact that I'm suffering from dementia and with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is a form of dementia, it moves fast. So the audience is following the story and then hopefully confused properly. You know what I mean? In the right way. So, man, just hearing myself talk about it right now, I go, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have tried to make this. Jesus, this is hard to do. So it took me a minute to say, yeah, I think I know how to make this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is tricky, that whole – there's so many things in this movie that are tricky. I mean, there is that idea of how far ahead of the audience you want to get, you know, where you want them, as you say, to be intentionally confused sometimes, but you don't want them to be confused in the places where you don't want them confused,
right, right,
and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought up the editor, because I was, you know, wondering just how delicate that editorial process was in terms of sort of trial and error and figuring out those kinds of things. I mean, about like when to reveal information and when to hold it back.
Yeah, you're a very knowledgeable film fan, because if you're looking at it thinking that, yeah, you're really, that's kind of inside baseball, but that's a good thing. You know, and then at some point you say, so all those things you said, all those things I said, and then at some point you say, we just have to go shoot this now. So let's go shoot it. And I'll do my best in terms of keeping the clock and the map, you know, in the back of my head and say, am I there? But at some point you say, I got to go get that scene shot today. I got to get this scene shot today. We got to go over to that location and I mean, so much of our location was based on, because we had such a limited time to make the movie, was based really on geography, you know. And so you know, sometimes we'd finish the scene and would say, here's the good news. We're literally walking. We don't have to even move trucks. We're walking down there. Now we are carrying, you know, the guys are carrying some equipment and everything. And we're going to be able to knock that scene off. So then, you know how it works. Then you go over there and say, okay, where am I in my demise? You know, where am I in my degradation because of dementia, you know? And is the story making sense at this point? You know how it works. It's all shot way, way, way out of order because you don't have the luxury, because you don't have the money or the time. But in a lot of ways, you know, by having constraints like that, I don't know if it makes it easier, but you don't have choices. So you say, well, this is what you got to do, you know.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's a couple of things you brought up there. One being the whole idea of keeping track of the progression of the disease when you are shooting out of continuity. I mean, how tricky is that for you, not just as a director, but as an actor?
Tricky. And I, like I said, I'm joking, but I'm not joking. The more I talk about it, I start to get panicky. I start to get a little anxious. Because I go, wait a minute, I already shot it. Because when I think about it, I go, yeah, what was I thinking? You know, at some point you just go, I just trust myself. I'll get there. I'll figure it out. I'll do it. You know, even that end kind of scene where the tone really, what I really love about the end, toward the end, you know, the last minutes of the film, it's 100% consistent, and at the same time, it has slowly taken you into a different kind of emotional level. Just it's kind of pulled you into. I think most audiences will say and have said, I didn't think I was going to quite feel like that at the end. I didn't know that's what kind of was going to happen. And, you know, you have to credit the actors and also the, you know, Marshall Adams, my DP, for some of those beautiful shots we set up and the tone and the lighting, all of it. But in terms of performance, a lot of that you're going, I don't know, I think I'm about here. You know, I should be here. Very few takes of me in those final, well, very few takes because I didn't have the time. All the other actors I give more takes to, that's something I'll have to be aware of down the road. That could be dangerous. But, you know, you can cut your nose off to spite your face kind of thing. So, yeah, I'm real proud of that, where it went. And you know, as an example, we won't be tipping too much or giving too much away, but that cut at the end, there's actually another version that is such a great shot, such a beautiful shot. And it was real tough to make that decision. So I went back and forth, let it sit there for a couple of days, go back. And I'd say, just play the other one again. But when I was watching it in dailies and I was watching the final shot without saying so much away, and it slowly pushes in like that, I went, boom, I should go out right there. And I knew there was more. And I went, okay, let me watch it. And I went, oh, this other shot, this is really good. And it has its own type of emotion. So it was a little bit of a gutsy move, I think, to say, boom, right there, leave it alone. You know, just leave it alone, let the audience kind of sit on that for a minute.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the cinematographer, because I thought the cinematography in the movie was incredible. And I really liked the kind of restrained style the movie had. Like, it didn't feel like you were forcing a lot of fancy camera stuff. You were sort of like letting the drama drive it. And what kinds of conversations did you have with your DP about what you wanted the kind of guiding principles of the visual style to be?
Lots. When I directed this little movie called Married Gentleman with Kelly MacDonald, and how weird is it, by the way, that they both were contract killers, and, you know, I mean, that was not planned, believe me. I was really... Sometimes I think it's determined by what the story is, and it's determined by, you know, what you have and what you don't have. The Married Gentleman script was never really, it almost wasn't finished in a weird kind of way. It was very, very, very spare. I think he had only written one other screenplay before. It's not really what this guy does, but I thought it was pretty good, you know. But when I read it, I was kind of excited as an actor because I thought, oh, this guy doesn't talk. He hasn't spoken. I'm on page like 15 or something. And I thought, oh, maybe he can't speak. Oh, this is going to be interesting. And then there was lines of dialogue. And I was kind of disappointed, frankly. I thought, oh, okay, that's a little disappointing. That would be interesting to play. So then he speaks. But it was really spare. And instead of saying, well, okay, I got to flash it up, or I said, no, I that's what I want. I'm going to let the visuals start to tell the story because I don't really have much, frankly. But also, I thought it was a cooler way to approach it. So I purposely would sit in the editing room, and the first edit wasn't even remotely close. I had to actually change editors. And when the next guy came in, he really helped out quite a lot. But even he said, why don't you leave me alone? I think I know what you want to do. We talked. And he said, I said, fair enough. He said, give me a couple of days and I'll work on it. I'll show you some scenes. And I came back and I said, you're close, but you keep moving out of the scene. He said, I know, you know, and I understood technically and traditionally why I was cutting out. But I said, watch this. Let's run this scene. I said, every time you think it's over, I'm not being indulgent, every time you think the cut is there, don't cut. Don't do it. Let it run. And then you're going to go, oh, okay, and you're going to want to say, let it go again. Let it go again. It had nothing to do with like, ooh, I want to watch my performance or anything, because you've seen it's really, really spare, because I wanted to set a kind of lonely, really slow, I want it to be quiet, like the pace to be quiet. I thought if this movie's going to work, an audience member is going to come in and sit. And this movie has a little bit of that same thing where you kind of go, okay, what is this? And then you think, I don't know if I'm interested. I'll stay for like another, you know, minute. And then all of a sudden you should start to like lean forward and go, wait a minute, let me try to follow this. I actually, one of the reviews, I think the Times, New York Times pointed it out. I think that's where it was said. I was really trusting in the pace of it. I didn't feel a need to rush anything. And, you know, you could sit just when you think, okay, I get it. I see Kelly McDonald's, you know, staring out that window, where I see that little red coat, or I see the thing. I get it. Okay, let's go. And then the audience go. You go, you're not leaving yet. And it's those extra seconds that set the tone. And therefore, it starts to tell the story, you know, that really lonely hospital stuff where she and I are, how we're separated, where we speak from and how little we say. So in this movie, I knew I didn't want to do that. And I really couldn't do that because you had to move it along with another pace. And then the pace had to change because you have to make the audience kind of go, wait a minute, what is he doing now? I thought I knew what he was doing. Now he's doing that. So you couldn't really let things sit the way I did before, but it is somewhat spare. And yes, Marshall and I talked about all that. I always talk about that because it might be, at the end of the day, my favorite part of directing, the visuals and the tone and the feel, you know, and the colors and all that. One of my favorite things to do directing is location scouting, really. I do it by myself first. I go and get in a car and I start driving and I start to go, ooh, that's what I'm seeing. That like I knew where I wanted to kind of place this. It didn't take place here in Southern California. It took place elsewhere, but I liked the idea of it being here, and it coincidentally turned out to be economically better, as it turns out, which so that was great. So like that. So once I see something, I'll see like an alley and I'll go, A, that's a beautiful shot, but it doesn't make sense in the movie unless blah, 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 blah. And then I'll start to set scenes. And I already kind of know, probably I'll walk down and I'll take photographs. I say, I might want to be coming, you know, shooting up this way. And then, of course, when you talk to Marshall or some of these guys I've worked with who are so good, Chris Seeger over in the UK and Marshall Adams, who did a lot of the Breaking Bad, they come in, they go, okay, I got it. Here's what I'm thinking. And then Marshall was just on the job without even letting me know. He was staying late in the office, going over things, starting to hire his guys, bring his guys in. He knew could get the job done and some department heads. And then some of the stuff, I think he knew so much about it, he couldn't even quite explain to me. So he had already started to develop how he was going to go about this, because he was in the same boat we all were, 25 days, you know. Not a lot of money, you know. But I like that part. I'm glad you noticed that, because some of those shots are just great.
Well, what are some of the ways that you maximize your resources when you've only got 25 days and a limited amount of money? Because it's not a movie that feels like it's straining against its resources to me. I mean, it feels very, you know, there was nothing in it that like bumped me or I went, oh, there's something they didn't get, or, you know. So how do you kind of, again, just maximize the, you know, make the most of what time and money you have.
Well, they were, after a while, I think people started laughing at me because usually a director is saying, I don't have enough time. You need to give me more time. I need more money. I can't do this. And no, I need that shot. I don't care. I need that shot. We have to have that shot. And a lot of times it's not indulgence. They're right. They do need a shot sometimes, I'm sure. I'm kind of weird because they started thinking, what is wrong with them? I'd say, what's that going to cost? And they'd say, well, you know, I said, but yeah, but is that, and how much time is that going to take? And I go, there's a better way to do this. I know I could tell a story just as well by doing, I said, you know, that location, I said, we'll do that. And then we'll use the parking lot there and work. It'll work great. And I was saving them tons of money, but I was also, you know, it wasn't all that. I wasn't being so magnanimous or so generous. I was also going, if I can do that, that's going to give me a little more time down the road here, or I'd rather spend the money down there. So in my head, I was actually doing like budgetary work, which a director goes, I don't care about the money. It's not my job. That's your job. You know, so it was kind of weird, you know, that I was, you know, really, really cognizant of that. But it was really because I thought, all right, how am I going to get this done and make it really good? It was really that simple.
Well, and I feel like in a way, that way of thinking kind of benefited the movie aesthetically because, you know, you don't have – one of the things I liked about it, again, is it has this kind of hypnotic feel to it that I think comes from the fact that maybe you didn't have the time to get a bunch of shots. So there's not a lot of extraneous cutting. You know, it's yes. Very just, you know, long takes, letting the performers kind of carry it, and it really draws you in. So, I mean, I do think there's a way in which probably to your point earlier when you were saying, you know, in something like you like having those limitations, it probably does actually make the movie artistically better too.
Yeah, because you kind of makes you think and have to scramble, you know. There's a pace to, there were some things that, you know, we were done, but then you look at it and you say, okay, when it slowly starts to come together, and you see it and you say, okay, we're getting there. But I went back and I said, okay, now I do need, they were smart enough to say, we should have a little cushion room here after editing. So there wasn't much, almost no money really. So what I did was I knew I had to create, like you say, kind of a mood, and you know, one of the things I wanted to do was I don't think the MRI machine was even in there. I think I wanted an MRI machine because we had to go find one. There's an example, you know, like MRI machines have changed. You know, the first one I was ever in, probably everyone's been in an MRI machine by now, but they're much easier now. They're better. It's faster. It's quicker. They're smaller. But they don't. Some of them don't make that really horrible, frightening sound anymore. And I love the idea of that sound, that really disturbing sound. And so it's real subtle. In fact, I don't think I really got it the way I really wanted it, to be honest with you. But I wanted that to be kind of in there without you knowing it's in there. You know, that kind of, you know, like put it in the score a little bit or hear it subtly somehow that you don't even know you're hearing that MRI sound. So, you know, things like that, that adds to that kind of vibe. And then toward the end, we were done, like I was saying, I said, you know, I'm not getting, the movie just is kind of starting and then it's kind of moving along and it's good and it's working. But what we basically did is stuff I've done before too. You just say, let's get a couple of cars. I think we may have even used someone's car for a couple of these shots, our own cars. And Marshall got in the back seat. It was getting light. We had to pick that window, that really specific window of light. And we waited and waited and said, okay, is everybody ready? And then you just start shooting. And so some of those driving shots and that real moody, that's some of my favorite stuff, that real kind of, it's lonely, but not driving through. And you kind of, the glare of like, you know, kind of the blowout of a window kind of across the way, you know, and you kind of, it's kind of, there's motion, but not really. It's night. You go, I kind of know where I am, but I don't really know where I am. And you're on the back of my head and you're seeing what I'm seeing. And yeah, like all that stuff we just got later, because I just knew there was something else that needed to set the visual tone and the mood of the movie.
I feel like that's a great description of the movie. Lonely, but not. That kind of describes the whole tone of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. You were mentioning how you kind of would in some ways, you know, shortchange yourself a little bit as an actor, or, you know, give the other actors more takes, more time than you gave yourself. And I'm curious, what for you were the pros and cons of directing yourself? I mean, is that a kind of common pitfall among actors who direct, that you kind of end up, you know, again, like shortchanging yourself because, you know, it's like you feel like you're sort of more, I don't know why you do that exactly necessarily, but I've heard other director actors say that
before. Yeah. That's interesting. I've wondered if other directors do that, frankly. Yeah, that's interesting. It does surprise me, and it doesn't surprise me. Well, certainly the danger would be being really indulgent, you know, what about me? But it's not even that so much. It's the pluses. Here's what I wouldn't do again. There are a lot of pluses to directing yourself. You kind of decided to do the movie, so you must have a general idea of what you're going to do, and then you get a really specific idea of what you're going to do. And if you know what you're going to do and you happen to be the lead, you kind of know where that movie's going, what that tone is going to be. So you have a kind of a head start and a big advantage in terms of time. You don't have to waste your time with a lot of what about this or what about that. You say, well, he's not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. That's not what this story is. So there's less discussion because you don't have to have the discussion with yourself or try to explain something to someone. So there's all that advantage, right? And then you can control yourself instead of putting it in the hands of other directors who might not see the movie how you're seeing it, and you never know what they're going to do in the editing room, you know? I mean, Sam Jackson will tell you one reason he says this is how many takes you get, it's so he can control it, because he's learned, he had bad experiences. I'm not speaking out of school. I think he's talked about it, and he's brutally honest about it. He says, nope, I know what I'm going to do, and I'm going to make sure that's what happens. That's happened. It's happened to me, too. You look and go, hold on a minute. That wasn't what I was doing. Now, that's only hasn't happened often. But so you have that advantage, right? And the disadvantage is you better be careful, because you should have spent a little more time on you to turn it. You could have turned in a better performance. You know, that obvious thing. And that trick would be if you go, no, I really want to be picky about what I do. I really do. Then now you're talking about a ton of time and a ton of, you know, going over budget and being then feeling rushed, you know, for the rest of the shoot. And that's a lousy feeling, you know, that rushed feeling.
What kind of environment do you try to create in general on the set to facilitate the actor's best work? Because that's another thing I like about this. The performances in this movie are great. And obviously some of that comes in the casting. If you cast Pacino and James Marsden, right, you're going to get great performances.
That's right.
Probably.
That's right.
But what do you do? What kind of environment do you like on set as an actor, and do you try to create as a director?
You know, it changes for me. I mean, I just kind of feel like I know what my role is. I'm the guy that has to do this. You're the guy that has to do that. She's the woman has to do this, blah, blah, blah. I like it. I like how filmmaking works. I like filmmaking for that reason. I think it's a team sport, and everybody, this is your job. And we all do our job and try to make something that we're all real proud of, right? I'm trying to think of when I did this. I did the second Beetlejuice, after I had done this. And I was pretty tired because I'd done a lot of work up until then. But clearly, you know, that's a different, your role there is different than this role here, not just the acting role, but what the world you've just entered. You enter that world, you know, if you get on the street and, you know, you do Chris Nolan doing a movie about something, you go, I'm sure there's a whole tone and vibe there. So for me, I don't know that I really think about it. I want it to be pleasant, and I want it to be relaxed and easy. And so I like actors. And if you cast right, you're right. You're maybe not halfway home, but probably, you know, especially with my cast in this. I waited and waited and kind of thought and ruminated on, and then I finally pulled the trigger and go, okay, that person. And then you hope they're available or they want to do it. So the compliments on this that I got later and right at wrap, but then months down the road, it makes me feel so good, because everybody was the amount of people who said, this is hands down the best experience of making a movie I've had. That makes me happier than almost anything. Also, when I hear what people talk about how good someone's performance is, I mean, I get all excited. I was just sitting and doing this other interview, and this guy was going on about Marsden's performance. And I wanted to get up out of my chair. I thought, I knew it. Because that feels like a real accomplishment for me. But these guys, if you cast right, they'll get you there. You know, they'll mostly get you there. But I try to make it like non-worrisome. you know, like, it seems kind of like nothing's going on, but, you know, let's go, come on, let's walk through this one time. And then it's a balancing thing. Like, Marshall, are you good? How you doing? Is there anything I should be, you know, my DP, what am I missing? And then moving along and cut a lot of stuff out. There's a lot of that wasted time on movie sets, tons of wasted time that I just, first of all, the energy gets bogged down. So I'll say, okay, what are we going to do? I say, okay, let's do that now. Let's, you know, and then I had a great first. He had a great attitude on the set. It makes everybody feel okay, keeps it going. So you got to keep the pace up so people don't get bored, but you also have to just watch an actor and go, oh, I see where he's going. That's pretty cool. And if I'm specific, I go, I need you to sit here and let me just hear this one time. And then I say, okay. And then you go over, talk, watch what they do, say, hey, you know that thing you did, you know, maybe you're thinking blah, blah, blah. Just lay something on. I go, just, you know, put that in your head maybe. But it's kind of a pace. I don't consciously say, hey, gang, let's all have a groovy time, you know. I just hope I set the right tone, and I kind of get going. And I suppose they watch me and go, I don't know, he seems like he knows what he's doing, you know. And I just go to work. I just show up and go to work. And sometimes it takes a long time to work a scene out. And sometimes I go, that's the best I'm going to get today. I ain't going to dwell on it. I got to move on. And sometimes I sit and make stuff happen. But if your crew's right, here's the key thing. Does everybody know the story we're telling? Does everybody know the movie we're making? Because once you know that, well, then you're not wasting your time having a lot of discussions about stuff you don't have. You know, there's no sense in bringing me a certain thing from wardrobe that would make no sense because that's not the movie we're making. And I got to say, people really jumped on board, man. Everybody just, when they showed up to help out and work. There's not one weak department, you know. And there was one guy, to be honest with you, I'm not going to say who it was, not an actor, early on when we were kind of slowly putting this together. And I thought, oh, this guy might have to go. I liked him, actually. Nice guy. But he was dragging things down, not out of laziness, out of making things unnecessarily difficult. And it was a little negative. And there were some people who were upset with him. And I just thought, how am I going to play this? So he'd come to me with problems, and I'd kind of laugh at him. I'd go, yeah. I said, it's all right. I'm really not worried about that. He was one of the first ones. And we never got rid of him. He was one of the first ones who, at the end of the movie, I think he started to smell it might be pretty good toward the end because he kind of became more of a team player. He was never a horrible guy. You know, it was just, but toward the end, he was one of the first guys to say how much he liked it and how good the movie is and how, you know, but other than that, everybody was like, they were all in. There's like no issues with anybody.
Well, in terms of, you know, putting together your crew and picking your department heads and things like that, I mean, were you largely working with people who you had worked with before as an actor? Was it new people?
New people. New people almost. I did make some calls. I called, you know, for a couple of first. They were all busy. Couldn't get him. Asked around about who else. I'm trying to think what other department I went after. And it just turned out there were probably some people we couldn't afford. And I knew that was a long shot and wasn't going to happen. But when I got Dan ringing my first, I mean, I'd immediately call him again. I actually recommended him to some director. I said, yeah, you really ought to use this guy. He just has the best way of working. But I didn't have the luxury of saying, oh, I can wait for this person or we can afford that person.
You know, we talked a little bit about Married Gentlemen. And now those are the only two movies you've directed, right, Married Gentlemen?
Except for, I always say this, it's actually my third. Letterman did this great thing where he had the late night film festival. And I always told him, I said, why you only did this once? I told this to Kimmel or somebody else. I said, you need to steal this. Call him and take it. It's a great idea. I did one. Catherine Herron did one. I couldn't remember the other day. Somebody reminded me. Paul Schrader did one. Ms. Van later, remember Paul?
Schaefer.
Huh? Paul Schaefer, not Paul Schrader. Oh, that would have been interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Michael and then Paul Schrader. Wow, that would be really interesting. You know, people who weren't making movies, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it was the greatest idea. And I remember distinctly. So I joked that was my first one. But, you know, I was a guy going out and shooting little shorts because I really had wanted to do this for a long time. And I remember running into one of those people, it might have been Catherine or somebody, I'd say, we had X amount of time. You know, there was, they said on this night, this is where the festival was going to be. I think each of us got 10 grand or something, and said, and you got to keep, have to keep it to these many minutes. I was panicked. I would run into somebody and go, hey, did you get your shot yet? And they go, no, we're just kind of figuring. I go, man, I said, how many days is, how long is yours? And they'd say, well, we're at about 14 minutes. I'm, 14 minutes, it can't be 14 minutes. It has to be. I was so panicked about following the rules and making sure I came in on the right amount of money and the right amount of time. I was just totally panicked. So that was my first one.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess I'm just curious, you know, because you, I'm sure you get sent scripts all the time as an actor, as a director. You know, like what drives you to want to direct something and not just act in it? Or is it a case where most of the time they're just sending you stuff to act and not direct?
Oh, yeah. That's what it is. Because, you know, it's hard to make a movie. It's hard to finance a movie. It's hard to get a movie made. So both, basically, you know, the really good scripts, obviously the great directors are going to get. So even the good directors don't often get great scripts. So let alone an actor who directs sometimes, he's not going to get the first shot unless you go, yeah, you get him. So obviously, you know, that one reason the money came was I said, well, you got Michael and it looks like he's going to get, actually at that point we got the money before anybody, I think. But then we say, I'm going to get James Marsden, and then it's, everybody starts to breathe easier. Yeah, you know, it's hard enough to read a decent script as opposed to a good script. And if you're going to commit to it, the script has to be pretty damn good because it's a ton of work. Like I say, and I say it because other people have said it, it's hard to make a bad movie. You know, it's just a lot of work. And you can't think about that. You can't go, oh, God, this is so hard. You say, yeah, everything's hard. Say, let's go make this thing, you know, try not to get too panicked about it. But no, this came to me as an actor. And I said, oh, it's good. I don't know. And then I went and did two movies, came back. It was still around. I went, that thing's pretty good. I'm going to read that again. And then they kind of forced me and said, hey, in fairness to the writer, he wants to know. And I said, you're 100% right. And if he needs to move on, he really should move on. But this is a good script. So they waited a little longer. And I said, yeah, but I want to direct it. And they kind of liked the idea, actually.
Well, I really enjoyed it. And I've really enjoyed talking with you about it. So thanks so much.
Great question.
Yeah, thanks for coming and doing this, Michael.
Clearly a film fan. All right, man. Thanks.